Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Saturday, November 24th, Oscar De La Hoya's Golden Boy Promotions presents Chuck the Iceman Liddell as he returns to the cage to take on the Huntington Beach bad boy, Tito Ortiz, in their third and final chapter of their historic rivalry at the Fabulous Forum, plus a fully stacked undercard of competitive MMA talent. Don't miss this night of historic rivalry, Saturday, November 24th at the Forum. Tickets start at $30 and are available at Ticketmaster.com or by calling 800-745-3000.
Welcome to the Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. This is our Thanksgiving Day special. You know, it's truly an honor for me to have this professor on my show. You know, you look at the accolades in his career, and you look what he does for the future and all aspects of the artistry of jiu-jitsu. He truly is very profound, so it's an honor for me to be able to share his story. With that being said, welcome, Professor James Eric Foster. Professor, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, and I just want to say the honor is all mine, sir. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, I guess it's mutual then. You know, like we spoke before the show, I've interviewed some of the best in jiu-jitsu, and it's kind of humbling. The other day, for the first time, you know, as I shoot many seminars and I deal with a lot of professors and even the respect aspect in Fuji, I did not know that there was a difference between Japanese jiu-jitsu and American jiu-jitsu and Brazilian
jiu-jitsu. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so I had a guest on that is the head of a multiple organizations across the world globally, and she kind of dropped the bombshell on me because in the post I put the I in front of the U, and in the Japanese aspect they don't do that. So it was kind of humbling, you know, for me. You know, I wanted to have you on for this holiday special because you've dedicated 30 years of your life to this aspect, to this artistry. You know, you got into it when you were 10 years old. Who was the aspect in your life that put the intent, put the love of the mat into Professor James Foster?
Well, man, you know, growing up as a kid, I really enjoyed watching martial arts movies with my folks on the weekend. And always kind of had a group of friends in our neighborhood that were into the same kind of thing. So we always wanted to do martial arts and be martial artists. I think back then we wanted to be ninjas. We would see all that stuff on the TV shows and play around in the neighborhood. And it took me a little while of convincing my parents to let me start martial arts. So they kind of put me in it to help with my coordination and everything. I was always real big for my age, and I think the brain was trying to tell that big old body to do things, and a lot of times it resulted in being clumsy and having poor balance and all that kind of stuff. So that was part of the reasoning they got me into karate. So karate is what I started with when I was 10 years old. And, actually the Karate Kid movie was a big inspiration for me, and that was kind of after that movie came out and we watched that together, that was what spurred them into letting me start training in karate back little 10-year-old James 300 Foster.
Right. You know, and it's you also have a black belt in karate, so that's a tremendous aspect.
Yeah, I did that for almost 10 years, so I ended up getting my first degree black belt in that not too long before switching over to BJJ full-time.
Yeah, which you've dedicated, I think now it's 23 years or somewhere just right around
I think I'm working on my 22nd year here, or working on my 23rd year, I should say.
It's
all a blur.
Yeah, right? You know, there's a person that was in your life, and that's Professor Santana, the arm collector.
Yes,
what
sir.
Was it about the arm collector that truly transformed James Foster into the practitioner you are today? Because what you've succeeded and accomplished on the mat, very few have done. What did he instill in you moving forward?
I think the biggest takeaway for me from Professor Jiva is just the kind of person he is off the mat. He's just a wonderful human being, one of the kindest, most gentle, nicest person you'll ever meet. So seeing somebody with that level of skill and technical knowledge who was also positively impacting people's lives off the mat really resonated with me and really made that be somebody that I wanted to, you know, surround myself with and have as a mentor, and I'm just so honored to have him as my professor. Actually, belated birthday shout out to him. Yesterday was his birthday, so and I got the chance to say it on live radio. It's pretty cool.
Most definitely, and you know it. It happened to be one of I saw that post that you did, and it happened to be one of your favorite memories in over 20 years. You know, it's nice when you can reflect on life in that aspect, because that's what I always try to explain to people about jiu-jitsu comparative to MMA. You know, and I'll be quite honest with you. When I started shooting seminars, they bored the crap out of me. And when
I started shooting
like tournaments, like Respect, I was like, what's this golf clap? What's this tee clap? You know, and you know these guys are going.
Yeah, it's a little different audience.
Yeah, it truly is. But, you know, the thing that made me fall in love with it, you know, Professor J.W. Wright did my show, and we talked about his accomplishments, and I said, what more could you pile on that you haven't already accomplished? He said, well, haven't you put down your camera and put on a gi? And I was scheduled to shoot a seminar a couple weeks later, and they tricked me, and they had a gi waiting there.
Oh, that's like, awesome.
Yeah, and I fell in love with it, but I didn't fall in love with the getting the choked out aspect from J.W., right?
Yeah.
I guess that's the way they break you into the family. You know, there's another person that I talked to you about, because you know, I'm transparent, so I always say everything that's, you know, there and what we've talked about before. There's another gentleman in your life by the name of Alan Moeller that is very proud of you. He's a tremendous aspect in your life, and he has great appreciation for you. What is that friendship and the friendship that you've correlated in the brotherhood and sisterhood of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, what has it meant to you throughout the years?
Man, Alan has been a constant in my Jiu-Jitsu journey. A lot of people don't know this, but my first experience training in an actual Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class was training with Alan. So my dad had gone down on a business trip to do some training for the telephone company that he worked for at the time. And he had seen Alan's school with a neon green Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu sign in the window. And he went in and talked to Alan, and they kind of hit it off. And he told Alan about me and told him that I was in karate at the time, but I was getting really interested in learning BJJ. And so what my dad did was the next time he had a business trip scheduled down there, he took me with him. And I think I was right around 17 or so, 16, 17 at the time, and went and spent a week. The hotel was like right across the street from where Alan's gym was at the time, and got to train and do all that and get my first introduction to an actual formal jiu-jitsu class. Prior to that, I'd only been trying to learn and reverse engineer things I was seeing Hoist Gracie do in the UFC. So I learned more in that first week of training with Alan than I could have done in several years of trying to pick stuff up from tapes and books, what limited amount of those there were at the time. So Alan and I maintained our friendship, and you know, we talked to each other all the time, and he's mentored me and helped me a ton with my business. And I've said this before, and he probably you know, thinks I'm blowing smoke at him, but I wouldn't be where I'm at right now if it wasn't for him, and his friendship and mentorship and guidance over the years just means the world to me.
Most definitely, and it truly should. You know, Professor, sometimes we get a little profound on the show. You know, Pat Miletich and others have gave me the moniker of Barbara Walters. I don't know why. But, you know, I like to ask deep questions sometimes, because that's how we kind of get to know you you know, not just as a professor, but with the intent and why you do what you do. When you open up the academy in the morning and it's just you and the mat, and sometimes, we get a reflection in life or a warm feeling or a thought, what does James 300 Foster take away from that moment you reflect?
Man, I just look forward to all the people whose lives I've had the benefit of being able to positively affect through teaching jiu-jitsu. So for me, that's my passion. When I go and open that academy up, I'm looking forward to teaching the best classes I possibly can, and, you know, not only giving people cool techniques and the camaraderie and all the other great things that come along with belonging to a jiu-jitsu academy, but also looking at how I can help them see the connections and the principles you can use from jiu-jitsu to positively influence and impact your day-to-day life. Because you always see people say jiu-jitsu is life and all these different things, and I think a lot of times that maybe people miss those connections and don't see how they're applicable to their day-to-day life and how they can use those principles to help them out when things start to get tough.
You know, you're exactly right. You know, one thing that I've learned, you know, it's probably been about 4 years now since I got into jiu-jitsu. I can't even speak today jiu-jitsu, but one thing I did take away from it is the brotherhood. You know, it's different than any other aspect or genre of the sport for me, because in the beginning, y'all didn't get paid. You know, you were the 9-to-5ers. You went and you trained at 90-degree, 94-degree gyms with these gis on for the passion, the love of the artistry. You know, what kept you, Professor, persevering and overcoming the obstacles of jiu-jitsu along this path to become the professor you are today?
I guess, when people ask me the question about persevering and how to deal with plateaus and what did you do to when you felt like quitting and all of this stuff? I mean, it's hard for me to relate because I never got into martial arts with the idea that I would reach a certain point and quit, or reach a certain goal and quit. My goal with jiu-jitsu is the complete and overall mastery of the art form, which, as you and I both know, is impossible. None of us will ever reach that in our lifetime. There's nobody out there who's reached that point. So for me, I think it's really important for people who are training to not give themselves that option to quit, it's just a matter of being consistent and realizing that we're all on our own path, because you see a lot of people hit that pitfall of comparing themselves to other students that started around the same time as them. And, you know, well, why is this person progressing faster than me? And they don't see all the other times that person is at the academy. Their window into that person's life is when they see them at the same time they're there. You know, for all they know, that other person's there, you know, 3 times a day, 7 days a week. Yet they're trying to have the comparison with themselves, who maybe comes in a couple times a week. But in their mind, oh, we started at the same time, I should be progressing in the same manner. And that's just not the reality of jiu-jitsu. The reality of jiu-jitsu is that we're all on our own personal journey. And for some of us, it takes longer than others to reach certain milestones in the art. And jiu-jitsu is a very thankless style in a way. It's almost set up. I think it was Salo I heard say once that jiu-jitsu is kind of designed for you to fail. So if you can persevere and overcome all these hurdles, you've really got something. You've really overcome a lot of things, and you've strengthened yourself for other areas of life as well.
Yeah, you truly do. You know, something you said there kind of reminded me of the interview that I had with John Velasco Iwano, and what you spoke of, God, it couldn't have been more pertinent to what he said. He said he would rather not take your money. he would rather you show up to the, you know, to the gym and train. And he said that's what defines a true practitioner in the artistry of jiu-jitsu, is the want, the need to train, to show up. He said, but half the battle is getting practitioners to show up. Would you say that you've had to deal with that aspect in the sport?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just a big hurdle is just, you know, people having the courage to step through the door to begin with. I mean, it can be a scary thing, especially if you don't know a lot about what jiu-jitsu is, or maybe the only time you've heard jiu-jitsu referred to is when you're watching the UFC. And it always surprises me at how many people think that there's strikes, like striking involved with Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And they say, well, I don't want to get hit, but I want to come in and learn Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I said, well, no, you saw that on the, you know, as it's combined with other art forms in the UFC, there's no striking in traditional Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's grappling with submission holds. And so I think a lot of people might have a little misconception in their brain when they're looking to seek jiu-jitsu out, because again, mainstream wise, the only time they're hearing jiu-jitsu is when it's being referred to in the UFC or Bellator or something they're seeing on TV. So yeah, it can definitely be a big step just to get somebody to come through the door. And then, man, jiu-jitsu is hard. You start training and dealing with all these different challenges and discouragements. So, yeah, you just got to keep showing up. You know, it's like that old saying, a black belt is a white belt who never quit. Definitely rings true.
I like that you said that, because I asked Professor Tom DeBlas that very same question. And he said, I'm not a black belt. He said, I'm a white belt at heart. And it kind of threw me back, because this is the first time I've ever heard a professor say that before in all my years. And I asked him to, you know, explain, and he said, because you're truly learning, you're gaining knowledge each and every day that you step on the mat. And
yeah, you should always be learning.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to what you say. You will never master the art. You can only define who you are and grow, but I don't think anybody can ever master something. I think even Bruce Lee searched for that certain aspect in what he did. You know, you look at the accolades that you've accrued. I mean, I could sit here and I could name them all off one by one. But I saw a post by you not too long ago, and it's something that your family did for you. And it meant a tremendous amount. It was, they went and they had I guess you won World's Masters twice, so they went and they had that framed up and done special for you. What did that moment mean to you, Professor, having people that you love and that are in your life look up and support your accolades and present you in that aspect?
Are you referring to the pennant that I got there at the Academy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually my family there at One Jiu-Jitsu with Jiva and his partner there in the business. So, you know, I run Foster Jiu-Jitsu, but being under Jiva, we're a One Jiu-Jitsu affiliate. And, yeah, they got me that pennant made up to hang up in the Academy and represent that accomplishment, which was very cool. They did the same thing for me back in 2015 when I was able to win Master Worlds for the first time and win my first black belt world title. So it definitely means the world to me, but you know, those accolades, those accomplishments, they really pale in comparison to the power that we have to help people through our platform in jiu-jitsu. So I know plenty of champions that have medals collecting dust in their drawer, and people forget about all those things. But the legacy we leave behind is the lives we positively impact through our instruction of jiu-jitsu. So for me, the accomplishments, they definitely feel good, and they look good on paper, and they look good on the wall there with that pennant. But yeah, definitely for me, helping people is my calling, in any way I can do that through achieving those accomplishments, it's definitely important and special for me. That's kind of really the reason I compete at all, is if I'm trying to do it in a manner to give others a platform and bring attention to struggles that other people are going through in their life. So that's what I'm passionate about when it comes to going out there and putting my jiu-jitsu out there and testing myself.
Most definitely, Professor, because you're doing two things. You know, you're showing people that when you set your mind to do something, you see it through. And the second thing you're doing is you're building a foundation, a platform for the future, not only of the artistry of jiu-jitsu, but in our youth. How does it feel knowing that your hard work, your struggles, not only have you growing, but you're instilling a passion, you're instilling faith and respect, but you're also helping these young individuals build a foundation and a legacy in their lives?
Well, it means the world to me, and I think it's really what this is all about, is building up a stronger, you know, younger generation that's coming up and giving them the tools that they need to deal with the challenges that life throws at them. I was really excited the other day. I got to promote two different kids that started out with me when they were like 6 or 7 years old, and now one of them's 16 and one of them's 17, so they were eligible to be promoted to their blue belts in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and they both train in the adult class, so I got to promote them. And it made me feel a little old, because I remember them when they were just tiny little guys and gals starting out, and now I've got to see them not only develop into great jiu-jitsu practitioners, but also just wonderful people and wonderful young adults. So, again, that's what it's all about for me. It's very much my passion to be able to, you know, try to positively impact people's lives through what I do. Even if it does make me feel old sometimes, having that perspective of remembering them when they were little tiny kids and now they're in there kicking the adults' butts in the adult class.
Well, tell me about it. I'm 53 years old, and I've been shooting combat sports and boxing for 23 years. So now it's like I sit back and I bring fighters on that were amateurs in the early days, and now they're world champions, and it's like, I'm sitting there going, man, I'm getting old. I even had Liam McGarry on the show the other day.
Crazy, really crazy how fast the time does go by, too. And every now and again, you get one of those markers to kind of give you that perspective. I'm like, man, has it really been that long? Like when I made that post about Professor Jiva's birthday and just I looked at my wife, I'm like, wow, I've known Jiva and I've been friends for over 20 years now. That's crazy.
It truly is, because I got a smack in the face of harsh reality from, you know, Liam McGarry. You know, I had him on the show as he set to fight in the MMA aspect in that world, but in December in Hawaii, and he's like, Don, you've been here since the beginning. And I'm like, I didn't really realize it like that. And he said it on the show, and it kind of just, it threw me back, because,
yeah.
You know, he's been, I watched him grow, become a world champion, lose the world title, and now try to regain it. And it's like I've been there for every step of the way, and it's a crude reminder of where we're going. And you're so right. Time does fly by.
It's a reminder, but it's also a reminder of how special what we do is, and how blessed we are to get to be a part of people's life in the aspect that we are.
It truly is. You know, Professor, one thing I look at life, I'm one that likes to sometimes look at reflections or different aspects. You know, when you first stepped onto the mat, did you realize now, looking back over your shoulder, that your life would be forever changed and transformed into the professor you are today and have such a tremendous outreach and respect for jiu-jitsu?
Man, I honestly didn't see it coming. It wasn't really my plan to be a full-time jiu-jitsu instructor and have an academy full-time. I was just thinking yesterday, it's been 15 years that I've been running my academy full-time and doing jiu-jitsu as my full-time occupation. And, you know, I did a lot of different things that a lot of people probably don't realize. I had a web design business, and I ran a multimedia lab at a community college for several years, and kind of was thinking I was going to, you know, go more the web or graphic design route and all of that, and the jiu-jitsu was always a constant in my life. It was always something I made a priority, but I had no idea that it would lead to where it has. But I can tell you this, I would not do anything differently. Everything worked out the way that it was meant to, and I couldn't be more happy to be doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, I had a chuckle the other, I guess it was yesterday. One of the gyms that I shoot for, I just got through shooting Professor Jake Fox, and one of the gym owners is Michael, I can't think of his name right now. He's going to be so mad at me. I know it's not Michael Morgan. It's Michael something, Michael Wood. And he talked about how he was at a seminar of yours in Texas and how prevalent your teaching in the X-Guard was, and how much he didn't realize that he will still utilize that today in competition. You know, what is it about the aspects of the X-Guard that you teach that many practitioners feel is still relevant to this day?
Man, you know, I don't even remember that seminar. They're all kind of a blur. So I don't always remember what I taught at what seminar or anything like that. When I go to teach a seminar, I kind of, you know, it's funny because people will ask, well, what are you planning to teach? And I always decide the night before or the day of when I get to the seminar. So I'll have a rough idea of a couple different options of what I could show. But I really think it's important to look at the level of the practitioners that are present and make sure that you're teaching something that's applicable for them, for their skill level. So I would imagine on that day that I could sense that maybe we had some more intermediate or upper belts present, so I probably got into showing some open guard stuff, and I think I might have shown some single leg X stuff at that one. I can't remember because I think I saw his comment on your post, and I think I remember vaguely remember showing some single leg X stuff that I've been playing around with, and you know, giving people some ideas, maybe some different aspects of that game that they hadn't thought of.
You know, Professor, you know, I always got to ask an elephant in the room question, because you see certain aspects that have defined themselves in the artistry, and they grow, and for some reason they don't feel relevant, or they feel they need to do something different to gain that aspect or the respect back. And I am no way demeaning this professor that I'm about to mention, but it goes back to what you were speaking about earlier, about how people think that they're striking in jiu-jitsu in certain aspects, and it kind of shuns them away from it. Well, there was a video put out called The Heart Stopper by Professor Dustin Dinesh. Do you think that aspects like that shouldn't be allowed to be construed into the jiu-jitsu society and artistry? Or do you think professors like that are trying to change or manipulate the aspect of the artistry itself?
Well, I didn't see the video you're referring to, so what exactly occurred in the video?
Oh, he actually thumps you in the chest and quite hard.
Without seeing it, it's hard to comment, but I would say unless you know everybody's prior medical history, that might not be a good thing to practice. There are a lot of people out there with heart problems that train, and yeah, so I guess you'd have to be really aware of who you're applying that to. I could just speak more generally on, like, the element of having your students work on jiu-jitsu with strikes involved, I think that's definitely something that can be beneficial. I don't know about hitting somebody in the heart or anything like that, but I know a lot of people that do what they call jits with hits. My friend Keith Owen likes to do that at his school, as well as my friend Ari, who runs Submissions 101. I think that's beneficial because it shows people kind of how some of the things change when there are strikes involved, giving you a little more perspective at the type of technique you would use if you were in more of a street altercation versus a sport altercation. So I definitely think that has its place and can be valuable. Just seeing how you need to adapt, I think EBI with the combat jiu-jitsu has kind of showcased that pretty well.
Yes, most definitely, Professor. You know, another one of my friends commented on the post of your show, and that's Jess Munter. You know, I started a fight with para-jiu-jitsu probably around a year ago, you know, because I felt that it should just be the EAU and a couple other organizations that weren't here affiliated in the United States. I felt that para-athletes shouldn't have to just face able-bodied athletes. I felt that they should be given a division all to themselves for para-athletes to compete
Absolutely.
Against each other. And I put out a fight, and I started the fight, and I went head-to-head with IBJJF, which isn't an easy thing to do, because basically what I'm asking them to do is rewrite the rule books,
right.
You know, rewrite how things go. And they issued out a statement, and they were very cordial about it, you know, and I got a phone call from a gentleman that I already spoke of earlier, Professor J.W. Wright, who owns Fuji, and he asked me, he said, all right, Don, you've done enough in this sport. I'm willing to do whatever you ask. Just tell me what you want. And I told him what I wanted, and he said, done, September 8th. And for the first time ever, you know, in a U.S. promotion, para-athletes had their categories. How, as a professor, do you feel in the aspect of teaching para-athletes, and do you feel that para-athletes are the next exception and the aspect of the sport?
Well, I think it's beautiful, and I love seeing what you did. And I remember seeing, you know, I follow Jess's stuff and all of her accomplishments. She's very inspirational. So I really love seeing that the para-athletes are getting that kind of platform and that exposure. I truly feel that the beautiful thing about jiu-jitsu is it's so adaptable. You know, there's so many different variations. I always say jiu-jitsu should work for you. You shouldn't have to work for jiu-jitsu. So if you have a limitation, there should be a variation or something different that the person can do, a different game they can play to work around those limitations that they have. So for me, seeing that, it was very exciting, and I look forward to seeing what more you guys do with it, because I think it's definitely a area that hasn't been explored enough.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm actually a para-practitioner myself. And
yes, sir,
I
remember seeing that, yeah.
Yeah, well, that isn't even why I took on the plight. I mean,
Right.
You know, I'm like you. I give without expectation, and I think that's what's defined a lot of the greats in this sport, is they do give without expectation. And I created the para page, and like right now, Ronald Mann, who is a two-time Abu Dhabi winner, he just won a double gold at the LA Grand Slams. He got an offer because of that to go to Sweden. He's getting ready to compete in Sweden.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, and this is the Worlds. They tried it at the Pan Ams. It worked, so they decided to go ahead and do it at the Sweden Worlds. And I think it's tremendous opportunities like that. They're going to allow the artistry to grow. And, you know, one thing I did look at, and there's the suicide rate for para-athletes was at a very high number. And I said to myself, I have to change this. You know, I have to fight for people so they can have an opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like what we were talking about earlier about if you have a position to be able to help people, that you're almost part of the problem if you're not using that position to help people.
Yeah. See, that's why I'm glad I had you on the show. And you, say you're not legendary, bro.
Well, I'm humbled to hear that and incredibly flattered.
Well, it's true. You know, it's not necessarily the accolades that create a legend. It's the path they take and they walk in life. You know, and your situation, it's both. You know, I do kind of want to touch on, just for a second, if you don't mind, I do kind of want to touch on the Fight to Win 86 super heavyweight fight.
Yeah.
What did that mean to you, Professor? Because, you know, you've been in the artistry and the aspect for 22 years plus, well, 22 years. You know, what does it mean for you to still be an active competitor and going out there and still winning?
Well, you know, coming off of, I had committed to doing that Fight to Win match, knowing that I was going to go down and compete at Master Worlds. So I kind of put a lot on my plate, but I have a student named Zachary Baltierra who's fighting cancer now for the second time here within the past few years. And I was trying to help bring attention to his GoFundMe and everything through the decisions I was making of competing. So when Seth reached out to me, Seth Daniels, who runs Fight to Win, and asked me if I'd like to do a match because they were doing it here locally again, I had actually faced James Fofalo at another one here and ended up losing a year or two ago. But he reached out and asked if I would like to compete on this one, and I said, well, you know, I'm a man of my word, so if I commit to competing, I'm going to do it. But I said, you know, I'm dealing with some injuries here, and I've got to go into Master Worlds, and I don't want to make a commitment to you and not be able to come through with it. And I said, we're also hosting a fundraising seminar that Saturday right after the Fight to Win for my student that's fighting cancer. And man, Seth really, you know, I knew he was a great guy, but he said, hey, he says, you know, we'll make the whole event about your students. I'll promote the GoFundMe link, and we'll get the word around about the seminar. And he says, even if you have to pull out of the match because, you know, if you get injured at Master Worlds or whatever, he's like, don't worry about it. We'll still promote your student's cause. So I was like, man, how can I say no to that? So I ended up, you know, going into Master Worlds with several injuries and persevered and ended up winning my division and taking bronze in the open weight. And then about a week and a half later was when the Fight to Win was. So I went in there pretty banged up and tired. And to be honest with you, I didn't really feel like I performed anywhere near my potential, but somehow came away with the win. And then it was really nice because they let me get on the microphone there and tell the audience about the cause and about my student and promote the seminar. And then we did a very successful seminar with my professor Jiva, myself, and my good friend Bryant Pangilinan the next day, and raised a ton of money for Zach. So yeah, that platform, having that platform, and, you know, even if I would have lost, like, just having the ability to go out and spread the word about his cause, you know, really meant a lot to me.
Yeah, that's tremendous that you did that, and, you know, it's tremendous that the organization's worked so well with you and help you incorporate and get that. I've had lymphoma twice. And I know that struggle is not fun. I lived about a year of my life in the hospital.
Yeah, it's definitely no rough. And, you know, seeing somebody so young in their life going through that within such a short period of time between bouts with it is really hard to see.
You know, Professor, the holidays are upon us. You know, what would you like most to say to my listening audience, and and everybody about who you are, not just as a professor, but as a man in your walk. What, if you could issue a statement of who James, Professor James Foster is, what would that statement be?
That's a tough one. Would they say you're like Barbara Walters, or
yeah.
asking the hard-hitting questions?
It comes from my heart. I don't write nothing down. I don't believe you should, because I think scripted is fake. So,
well,
you know.
I would just say that, you know, I'm about what I spoke about earlier, helping others through my, you know, sphere of influence, however big or small that may be. That's what drives me. That's my passion, is to serve others and to help others. And I want other people to realize that they have that ability as well. They don't need a big platform or a bunch of accomplishments in order to be able to do their best to be a good person and help others. So we can all have an effect. And, you know, there's a great book called The Compound Effect, and it talks about how all these little things add up to have a great result. And I think, you know, one of my pet peeves is, like, for instance, when it comes to charitable causes, people will make it about them. And when I say they make it about them, it's when you say, oh, you know, we're doing this cause to help this person out, and they say, well, I can't donate because I can't donate a lot. And that makes it about them and not about the cause, because they're more worried about how they're going to look if they can't donate, you know, $20 and they can only donate $5 or whatever. What they don't realize is that all adds up. All those $1 and $5 donations make a big difference. And combined, all the little acts that we do together can have a great and very positive impact on someone's life. So I always encourage people to help, no matter how little they may think they're helping.
I don't think you could have articulated it any better. You know, it's funny, just yesterday, because I also do, I work in the music industry also, and I've seen an artist, a couple of his tour dates had bailed out on him and kind of left him high to dry, and, you know, he basically had money for one more night in a hotel room, and I didn't see anybody help him. And I was
right.
Like, you guys are there for him when he drops a great album or a terrific song, but where are you when he needs something? Well, you know, you call yourself his friend or his brother or his sister. You know, where's the compassion in life? And I deal with a lot of people that are internet sensations. They do To Catch a Predator and MTV and all these different
right.
aspects. So I hit one of them up and I said, did you know that he's basically on the street right now? And I said, is there any way you can go and do a live, because they get, you know, 17,000 people in their lives? I said, and just get people to donate a dollar.
Yeah, exactly.
I said, there's no reason why this young man shouldn't be home for the holidays. I said, is there any way we could possibly do that? And they took up the plight, and they made sure that man made it home for the holidays. I just think that society has changed to a point that it's, I don't know. I used to talk about the good old days, Professor, because I'm 53.
Yeah.
And I was in an interview with, I think, Juan Archuleta, and I realized that I was speaking about a dead horse. I'm speaking about days that he would never know or see or understand.
Right.
And I realized that what we grew up with, it was no longer here, and we'll no longer be able to share that aspect except for through thought. How do you
It's interesting. It's interesting to know that we have such a bigger capacity now to get information around and spread positivity and help people's lives through social media, but that's not the manner in which it's being used.
No. It's honestly, I think, and this is my personal opinion, even though I do my show via plug-in through the internet, but you know, I think social media is something that should have never actually been put into the public's hands. That's my personal thought. I think the internet is tremendous. I think what it could be utilized for is tremendous. But I think it also gives the people that extrude hate and don't respect people. And I think it causes others to commit suicide. I think it causes other aspects.
Yeah, it's a it's another tool that can be used for good or bad. So, you know, I think people, because they know they're hidden behind a screen, they aren't as responsible with what they would say, because, you know, if they were face to face with that same person inside an elevator, they would probably never say that to their face. Yet when they're hidden behind their phone or their screen, they'll say all sorts of horrible things.
Oh, most definitely.
So it's, you know, taken a lot of the accountability out of people's words and actions, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but I will say it does have the great power to help as well. I mean, plenty of times when I've hosted fundraisers and things, I mean, it's amazing to see what we can all do when we come together to help for a common good.
Oh, yeah, I have to agree.
So maybe,
there, you know.
Maybe it shows us the worst and best of society. You know, I was listening to Joe Rogan's podcast the other day. I forget which one, but basically said that the crazy people have always been there. It's just we're getting a better idea of how many of them there are because we see them being their true selves on social media.
I take it even one step further. I say I've been married for 34 years and I still don't know my wife. She gets mad. I say I got to sleep with one eye open. I mean,
hey,
really,
that's what keeps it fresh, though, right?
Yeah,
keeps you on your
it truly
toes.
Does. I mean, if you think about it, you really don't. You really don't know the person, even though you've been with them all that time. You really don't know the person laying next to you.
You learn
that complex of a matter.
You learn new stuff all the time.
Yeah, you truly do. But what I was getting at is, you know, people don't realize these are the type of people that are living next to them. And we're getting way too far off topic here.
No problem.
You know, I look at your career and, you know, I knew I had to have you on the show. You know, you laugh, like I said earlier, when I called you legendary. You know, you are a legendary, Professor, and your walk and what you give back, only true legends can do that. Whether you're 0-6 or 21-1 or whatever, what you've done in life has changed lives, and nobody can take that from you. You know.
Well, I really appreciate hearing that, because that's what I feel my purpose is. So if that's coming across to others in any way, then I guess I'm on the right path in my journey right now.
Yes, you truly are. You know, in life, I got two more questions and then I'll let you get about your day, Professor. You know, in life, I always believe that there's people that walk in front of us, there's people that walk behind us, but the ones that stand side by side with us, the ones that give us that intent, the one that whispers in our ear when we're not doing something right, are the ones that we tend to forget, and we don't often get an opportunity to thank those individuals. So I'm going to hand the microphone over to you and the people that have been there for the creation and the duration of Professor James 300 Foster. Now is your opportunity to give those thanks, Professor.
Well, I'm just always forever thankful for having such amazing and wonderfully supportive parents. They're probably listening. I love them incredibly, more than any words can describe. And they've been very supportive. I mean, my parents were there for every karate class I ever attended, sitting on the sideline watching, and many, many years of jiu-jitsu doing that as well. And so definitely wouldn't be where I'm at without their love and support and encouragement. My wife, who I've been with for 17 years, again, same thing goes for her. Always been incredibly understanding and supportive, and, you know, many late nights where I'm at the academy and gone doing 13-hour days when I was getting the business up and running, and, you know, just always been there for me and encouraging and supportive as well. And I have to, again, give major props to my great friend and mentor, Alan Moeller, as well as my Professor Jiva Santana, for all the same reasons, not not just supporting me in jiu-jitsu, but also supporting me in my day-to-day life. So all of those people really, really stand out in my mind, and I just want them to know how special they are to me. And with tomorrow being Thanksgiving, I'm just incredibly thankful for all of them, as well as all my students who have supported me over the years. I'm just incredibly grateful and blessed.
You truly are. You truly are, Professor. You know, I got one more hard question, one more Barbara Walters question for you.
All right.
You know, you've had a tremendous aspect of life bestowed upon you. When it's all said and done, how would Professor James Foster like to be remembered?
Well, again, it goes back to what I talked about earlier. I just I don't want people to remember me, you know, when people are remembering me when I'm long gone. The legacy I want to leave behind is that I helped positively affect and influence many people's lives in a great manner, and used my position to do that. I could care less about the world titles and medals and all those things. They were fun for the brief time that they occurred, but I want to be remembered for all the people I was able to help, and the people who become better individuals through jiu-jitsu and use jiu-jitsu to help in other areas of life, and use jiu-jitsu to help others and continue my legacy in that manner.
Well, Professor, I truly believe you will. You know, I listened to this interview today, and you truly are a humble man. You're doing it for all the right reasons, and, you know, you don't find very many people like you in life. Everybody is always wanting to get something out of what they do, and you give totally without expectation, and that's a rarity, and that alone makes you a legend in my heart and in my mind. You know, Professor, it was truly an honor for me to have you on the show and to be able to share a little bit of who you are with my listeners. You're a tremendous man in your walk, and you're even more tremendous in what you do for the future. You know, I can't thank you enough for what you do for the youth and the people coming up in all aspects of sports. And, you know, I think if there was more people like you, Professor, the world would be a better place. You truly have changed my life, and hopefully you've changed the life of my listeners, because you're a profound man in your walk, and your parents did a tremendous job with you. And what you're doing now is I can't even put into words. You know, I didn't think this interview was going to go this way, because you truly do practice martial law. You truly are a martial artist, you know, and that's a tremendous attribute to who you are and what you believe in. With that being said, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. If there's any aspects that you would like to add to the show, any people that you would like to say thank you that you missed, or just anything else that you would like to say, the floor is yours, Professor.
Well, I'm just incredibly humbled by your words and greatly appreciate everything you said, and I'll continue to do my best to walk the walk and continue doing what I'm doing. Definitely have to give a shout out to some of the causes that are near and dear to my heart. Major one being Black Belts for Butterflies. Black Belts for Butterflies raises funds through seminars to help with autism awareness. I'm also a big proponent of We Defy Foundation. They help place disabled veterans within jiu-jitsu facilities and accommodate their training and help them experience the positive benefits of jiu-jitsu and helping them with their PTSD and everything else that they go through, as well as Mission 22, raising awareness for the veteran suicide epidemic. The VA accepted statistic on that is 22 veterans take their life every day. The number's actually way higher than that once they run it through all their filters as to what is considered suicide or not. They come up with the number 22. Big supporter of Mission 22, We Defy, Black Belts for Butterflies. I would encourage people to go in and, you know, check out those causes and do what they can to help. Every little bit helps. And definitely have to give a shout out to my sponsors, my family at Show Your Roll, who've been nothing but supportive all these years. My newest sponsor, Mad Ritual, who makes an amazing recovery product, CBD balm for your muscle recovery and pain relief, have helped me greatly. And to anybody that I missed, I apologize. There's so many different people to thank, but I just want to thank everybody, thank my students, thank all my supporters, all my fans. Love all you guys, and I hope everybody has an amazing and happy Thanksgiving. And please be mindful of, you know, that Thanksgiving isn't always a happy time. There are people out there struggling. So if you know somebody like that, please reach out to them and do what you can. Offer them a place in your home and help them in whatever way you have the capability to do.
Oh, you know, and you say you're not legendary, bro.
Well, you're legendary. You're trying to make me cry with that last question or the last the comments on me being legendary.
Well, I just call it like I see it. You know, I've been very fortunate to interview some of the best in all aspects and all genres of the sport. And
I'm truly honored, and I'll say this is up in probably my top two favorite interviews I've ever done. So thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, it's been my honor, Professor. I hope you and your family have a tremendous Thanksgiving. Thank you once again. And by the way, when we get off the air, I'll communicate with you either after. It'll just be after the holiday. There's a couple individuals that exemplify those types of organizations that you were speaking about, and I think the three of you together that I'm going to connect with you can correlate things better and save more lives. So if you're open to that,
that sounds great. I'd love to help however I can.
Yeah, it's truly tremendous to have individuals like you doing this. You know, Professor, thank you once again. I hope you and your family and your students have a tremendous Thanksgiving. Thank you for sharing who you are with my listeners and the world. You truly have blessed my show, and it's an honor for me to have you on.
Thank you, sir. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours as well. You take care.
All right. Thank you, and God bless you, Professor. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Professor James 300 Foster. The man says he isn't a legend, but on or off the mat, I don't care. You can argue with me till the cows come home. The man truly is a legend in heart, and that's something that you can't take and that it can't be faked, and he truly is a profound aspect in the artistry of jiu-jitsu and even a bigger aspect in the heart and the kindness of being a man. His parents did a terrific, terrific job in the raising of him and the artistry he had taught him, humility, and that's something that can't be replaced. I'd like to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch-Duran and Juan Ramirez, the 86ers.net, an organization that gives back and feels nobody should be 86th in life, with Alfred Terran and Freddie Colbert. Well, and last but not least, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice. You know, it was a tremendous holiday special for me today to have somebody like Professor Foster on, who truly does show the world how we all can be. He's a fine example of what it is to give back without expectation. On that note, I'm kind of missing my mother. Really didn't know her much in the early years of my life. I got to hear I love you from her when I was 30 years old, but it's the holiday, so here's a tribute to you, Mom, in heaven. God bless. Everybody have a tremendous holiday.
You all appreciate it. When I was young, me and my mama had beef. 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Shed tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell.
in elementary. Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen. Mama, I finally understand.